I'm here today because President Trump is committed to improving this relationship.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo traveled to Sochi, Russia on Tuesday. And it was there where he met with the country's President Vladimir Putin and Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov.
We have differences. Each country will protect its own interests, look out for its own interests of its people. But it's not destined that we're adversaries on every issue.
That may be true, but Tuesday's meeting also focused on tensions that exist between Russia and the U.S., and those include relations with Venezuela and Iran.
On Venezuela, we have disagreement.
The Secretary of State also said he warned Russian officials about interfering in the upcoming U.S. elections, a topic President Trump declined to touch when he spoke to Vladimir Putin earlier this month.
We didn't discuss that. Really, we didn't discuss it. We discussed five or six things.
To be clear, top intelligence officials under both Trump and Barack Obama have agreed that the Russian government did attempt to influence the 2016 election, and that the country has continued those interference efforts in the years since. Now, the State Department appears to be on the same page as U.S. intelligence leaders.
And we spoke, too, about the question of interference in our domestic affairs. I conveyed that there are things that Russia can do to demonstrate that these types of activities are a thing of the past. And I hope that Russia will take advantage of those opportunities.
Even as the president remains focused on improving relations with Russia.
We intend to do a lot of trade with Russia. We do some right now. It's up a little bit. But he'd like to do trade, and we'd like to do trade. And getting along with Russia and China, getting along with all of them is a very good thing. Not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's a positive thing.
So here's the issue. If the president is saying one thing about Russia and Pompeo is saying another, that could lead to muddy foreign policy with a country that has repeatedly tried to influence our elections. And we're going to talk it over. It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. We turn now to the current state of U.S.-Russia affairs with Kimberly Martin, professor of political science at Columbia University's Barnard College. Kimberly, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Tanzina. Good to be here.
So let's get started because I have many questions. First of all, are we friends with Russia, or is it just the president who's friends with Russia? What did this latest visit tell us about how different the president's relationship is with Russia versus our own administration?
That's such a good question, and it's really hard to answer. But I think the most important thing to take away from this visit is that there are areas where it's important that we cooperate with Russia, and that especially is true on arms control questions. We've got some important treaties that are under threat. But certainly there are so many areas where we are adversaries with Russia, and Russia shows no signs of changing.
So one of the things that keeps coming up here is the fact that Russia did interfere in our election. We know that they interfered.
Yes.
And why are we even still debating this? I mean, why didn't the president bring this up in his conversation with Putin? Why is Pompeo taking the stance that he took?
Well, I think Pompeo is taking the correct stance to take, which is that we know that you intervened in 2016, and we are worried about you intervening in 2020, and don't do it. And the problem, of course, is that President Trump isn't able to accept the facts that there was intervention and that there is ongoing attempts at intervention, and that Russia isn't just picking on the United States, but that Russia has also intervened in the elections in Europe and in other places around the world, including, of all places, Madagascar.
And we've heard, you know, we hear Pompeo say that in the clip we had earlier in the show, he said, I hope Russia will take advantage of those opportunities to not interfere in our election. That sounds quite generous. What happens if Russia doesn't take advantage of these quote unquote opportunities?
It's just going to make the relationship very much worse. But, you know, there are limits on how the United States can react to what Russia does in a hostile fashion. We can keep on ramping up the sanctions, but at some point there's a limit to what can be done because there just isn't that much of an economic relationship between the United States and Russia. And I mean, we could take, you know, the all out step of trying to remove them from the SWIFT banking system, but that would destroy the Russian economy and hurt ordinary Russian people as much as it hurt the elites. And so I don't think anybody wants to do that unless things get very much worse. And so, I mean, really, there's the best step that the U.S. can take is to defend itself from election interference, because there's not that much we can do to harm Russia without really ramping up the conflict.
There have been a lot of conversations in recent weeks about the Trump administration and increasing tensions with Iran. We've talked about that on this show. Let's talk about Russia and Iran at the moment. How closely aligned are they?
Well, they certainly have a very strong incentive in presenting themselves as being aligned so that they can challenge the United States. Both of them are in favor of the idea that we should be in a multipolar system in the world, which just means that the two of them can do more independently without worrying about the U.S. reaction. But the truth is, when we get down to the details, there are real problems in Syria, for example. Russia is angry at the role that Hezbollah and that Iran is taking in Syria in some ways. And so even though technically they're aligned with each other, there's some real conflicts emerging. And it would be good if U.S. diplomacy were actually nuanced enough that we could work on those differences and try to push them apart instead of lumping them into the same category.
How much of a focus was Iran in Tuesday's meeting? Do we know?
We don't know. All we know is what the public statements were. And I would guess that probably it was not the major focus. I think the major focus is probably Venezuela from what we've heard. But it's interesting that on the Russian side, they're just talking about the good points of the meeting. That's what the Russian press has been focusing on.
Speaking of Venezuela, we know that the at least the quote-unquote attempted coup with Juan Guaido has not been successful so far. U.S.-Russia are very much at odds when it comes to Venezuela. What happened in this meeting that we know about the country?
All we know is that they continued to express the fact that they're on opposite sides of this question. And I think the major question that we have to look at when we're looking at the Russian presence in Venezuela is what they're doing there. It could be to actually try to prevent the U.S. From taking any military action by fighting on behalf of Venezuela. But it also could just be Putin trying to say he wants a seat at the table in whatever kind of negotiation happens for a transition to a Guaido regime. And it's possible that that's just, Russia wanting to retain a presence rather than actually threatening the United States. We'll have to see what happens.
I'm speaking with political science professor Kimberly Martin about Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's recent visit to Russia. Kim, in a phone call with Vladimir Putin on May 3rd, President Trump said that they discussed how the U.S. and Russia could work together. He did not ask him about the election interference, which I'm still not sure why, but what do you make of the president's description of this call about foreign policy moving forward?
Good luck with that. I mean, there's so many basic interests that the U.S. and Russia do not have in common. Basically, Russia wants a stronger role in the world, and Russia does not fundamentally agree with the notion that the world should be moving in a direction of having more open relations and more democracy. Of course, we don't really know what direction Trump is moving either, so maybe Trump has an idea in his head that he's moving closer to Putin. But it doesn't look like Trump's advisors are going to allow him to do that because they always push back and go in a more normal direction that we would expect of U.S. foreign policy.
But does the president's informal, if you will, or close relationship, if you will, with Vladimir Putin undermine the administration's efforts to do all the things that you're laying out?
You know, when push comes to shove, we have not seen all that much actual cooperative action between the U.S. and Russia. And so it's not actually clear that all the statements that President Trump has made over the years have had that much of an effect on the policy choices that the U.S. is making. We still have really strong sanctions against Russia, and nobody is talking about lifting them except maybe President Trump, and he doesn't seem to be taking actions to do so.
Well, let's talk about those sanctions. Okay. What are the sanctions that we have against Russia?
Oh, they've gone through waves. So some of the sanctions are against developments in the oil and gas industry to try to prevent U.S. banks, for example, from giving loans to keep U.S. And European businesses from cooperating in what's called tight oil and gas, the stuff that's more difficult to get that takes advanced technology. Some of it is directed against particularly wealthy individuals who are associated with Putin's regime. What we've tried to do, I think, is avoid consumer goods to try not to have the effects be directed at the Russian people. But the sanctions have over the years gotten stronger and stronger, and there's no sign that they're going away.
There is the Trump administration earlier this year said that it would withdraw from the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. Big name. How important is that treaty?
Well, it's important mostly for its historical value and for what it did back in the 1980s. It was the first treaty that established what are called on-site inspections that allowed intelligence officers on both sides to go look look at what was happening on the ground. And it meant that for the first time in history, we were no longer just relying on satellite overflights to understand what the other side was doing. So we could actually eliminate an entire class of missiles and have confidence that the other side was actually following the rules. Now, what's happened is that since 2014, we know that Russia has not been following the rules, that they've developed this new missile. Once the United States started accusing Russia of that, Russia started accusing the United States of doing something similar with the missiles that it has in its ballistic missile defense systems that are located in Poland and Romania. And so it's gotten kind of technical and kind of complicated. But an underlying factor that is influencing everything is that China is not part of the existing agreement, and China has new INF missiles that affect both Russia and the United States.
We've got about a minute left. I'm wondering if it's possible to create a new nuclear deal with Russia and China, as the president might be thinking about.
Unlikely, because China has no incentive to cooperate. Right now, China can threaten Russia, and China can threaten any U.S. Navy ship that comes near Chinese waters with these intermediate-range nuclear missiles. And why would China want to give that up? It's not clear.
And we're also going back and forth with China on trade, so this is an interesting time for us. Kimberly Martin is professor of political science at Columbia University's Barnard College. Thank you so much, Kimberly.
Thank you, Tanzina.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.